Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Well, one thing you might notice about Christians, when we talk about sex and relationships, we have a pretty sound and solid idea of what is right and what is wrong. Our understanding of how sex and relationships work has, for many, become the platform for their ministry as they teach and they help people adjust to doing things God's way. But what's happening to our society's understanding of how sex and relationships work? Importantly, what are the attitudes of young people, the up-and-coming generation? Are the popular conceptions in movies and television and broadly across the media true? Or what do we make of the changes that appear to be happening in a generation that's shaped by social media and the internet? Well, you'll be able to join in our conversation today. You might like to participate. Our talkback line will be open on 1-800-316-316. Our special guest through this coming time is Paul Ninnis. Paul is the co-founder and managing director of Real Talk International. He uses his powerful life story and 15 years ministry experience to present the life-changing Real Talk message. Interesting to note that Paul was awarded Professional Leader of the Year back in 2014, and Paul is our guest today. Paul, welcome along to 2020.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Paul, a lot of people might not have heard of Real Talk before. Give us a little, in a nutshell, idea about the sorts of things you do in ministry.
Well, predominantly we work in schools, independent schools around Australia and New Zealand, and we've grown pretty rapidly to reach lots and lots of young people. So this year we'll probably speak to about 40,000 young people in schools around Australia, and we speak to people about, essentially you could say, God's plan for love and life. We talk about personal identity, we talk about how we're made, and we talk about relationships and making good decisions and a really positive vision of what marriage and sex was created for.
So when you say you talk to 40,000 young people in the course of a year, I imagine that at the end of a presentation that you make, one of the most important things is the sorts of Q&A type sessions that you would have and the feedback that you'd be getting from young people. I wonder whether you can reflect on, you know, if we're talking generally and broadly about sex and relationships, this clearly is going to be an area of interest for young people. What sort of feedback are you getting?
Yeah, totally. I think when people hear what we do, they say that must be really difficult. And yet we don't find it difficult because, one, they're topics of great interest, and two, you can present this message that is a really beautiful and awesome message in a way that captivates people. And so the main response we get from people is that they've really enjoyed the time with us. Just yesterday I was at a school in Brisbane, and I heard one of the students as they left say, that was actually really fun. And so we have a fun time in talking about these really deep and sometimes challenging topics. The other bit of feedback we get is that this was not what we expected, and that people feel encouraged and sometimes really transformed and I suppose supported in their own experiences, because a lot of people will have experiences that are negative when it comes to this topic, and those negative experiences can shape their understanding of the topic. And then when they can see that there's reasons for why they felt the way they have and reasons for the heartbreak they've experienced and that there is a better plan, then that can actually be a real consolation and a real encouragement for them as well.
We mentioned that young people and all people are bombarded by, you know, the Hollywood impressions we might get from ideas about sex and relationships and what's happening on television, what's happening in social media. The idea of real talk, of getting real on issues of sex and relationships, and I know you like to talk about personal identity too, and we might unpack that a little bit more, but this idea of getting real, young people can see through facades, and when you as a Christian leader are talking about sex and relationships in real talk, I mean, we've got a pretty strong foundation on which we stand, don't we, as Christian believers?
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, even the idea of marriage and the institution of marriage that has been passed on for millennia, whilst it's not necessarily a Christian institution, the Christian worldview brings a lot to what people have understood in that, and these are not new concepts. They're not new ideas. In some ways, they're tried and tested, and often the most steadfast way to produce a good society and to lead to happiness. And really, the family unit is very much the pillar of society and is very much the building block of healthy society. And so the concepts of marriage and sex and family have been essential ingredients for many, many millennia.
Okay, let's talk about the attitudes of young people because, you know, as your team is addressing as many as 40,000 young people in the course of a year, you've got the Q&A sessions. I'm not sure how formal you get with the sorts of feedback that young people might bring or whether you reflect on, you know, the sorts of statistics that people will come out with from time to time when they've done studies on these things. But if you're trying to get an idea, what's the reality of what young people are talking about with regards to sexual behaviours? What's your impression, Paul?
Yeah, look, our impression is that you get a whole wide gamut of people's experiences and, you know, personal beliefs. And sometimes there's a real disconnect between young people and their parents and young people and their teachers. As you mentioned, social media and just the rise of the internet over the last couple of decades has meant that by far the digital communication networks are the main way that people are receiving education when it comes to relationships and sex and marriage. And so many people's views and their vision in some ways for healthy relationships comes from these media and these mediums that often present it in a different way. They might have a different driving force behind why they're presenting that message. And so a big one when it comes to that is the topic of pornography is a huge part of what is forming culture, sometimes directly and most commonly through a direct experience of pornography. And I've got stats around that if you'd like to talk about that. But also just through a almost like a passive smoking kind of effect through pornography, it's leading to a culture change and a hypersexualization of culture that we're all living in, whether we're accessing that sort of view of sex or not.
Interesting when you talk about a passive smoking effect. Let's take a few moments to just reflect on that because pornography, a lot of parents will be saying, I'm doing my best to protect my child or my young teen from pornography, hoping that they're going to have a good, sound foundation for understanding sex and relationships. But as you say, there's a passive smoking effect. Because every young person is going to be affected because there are a huge swathe of young people in no matter what group who are going to be affected by pornography, and it's going to affect the group attitudes. How do you reflect on this sort of passive smoking effect?
Yeah, totally. I was with a Christian school yesterday, and we had a bit of a Q&A, and we don't regularly do Q&As just because we often have whole year levels that we present to, and it's not a forum that's always best. But at this particular school, there was a Q&A, and there are a number of questions that came up, and I won't give details on the radio. It wouldn't be appropriate, but a number of questions that came up that were clearly linked to ideas that have come from pornography. So whether or not the people I was speaking to had seen porn or just the concepts around sexual behaviours. And I was able to, in answering those questions, link the two and say, look, there's nothing wrong with asking this question and there's nothing wrong with even having desires in this way, but we do need to sometimes question why are our behaviours and our desires moving in that direction, and is that best or is that a script that has come from the sexualization of culture and the spread of pornography through the digital medium. And so, that's a classic example that there are questions that people are having about, am I okay and should I be doing this? And is this what's normal? And those questions have been formed by opinions and visions and pictures that for many generations people would never have ever had access to. So we're having young people seeing things that our grandparents wouldn't have dreamed of seeing and probably couldn't have even conceived. And say, whether that's a person seeing it directly or that's something their friend has seen and then brings up as a concept in the playground, that's the kind of passive smoking effects that we're having a cultural sway or a cultural movement in certain directions. And sexual behaviours would back that up. One bit of research out of America found that particularly young women are judging how good sex was, not based on how connected they are to the other person, or not based on even the pleasure that they've experienced, but more and more there's a move towards judging how good sex was on whether you actually provided a PSE, a porn star effect, so that whether you did the things that they do in porn well. And in some ways that's tragic, that sex is moving away from a loving, connecting, beautiful, enjoyable experience towards something that is just about performing and pleasing the other person.
Okay, well, I want to invite listeners into our conversation today. You might like to join in. 1-800-316-316. Our talkback line is open. Our special guest is Paul Ninnis from Real Talk. We are talking about young people's attitudes to sex and relationships. We'll take some calls in just a few moments. 1-800-316-316. You can also leave a question or a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/visionradio. There's a question of authority here, Paul, because when you say young people have something of a disconnect between their parents, and then there's a young people disconnect to their teachers, there's almost a skepticism, a cynicism about what authority might be trying to force upon them. And so then you've got this prevailing culture through the internet, through social media. It is a significant thing that there might be a question of authority. And so you turn up with Real Talk, and in a single session, you say something sensible and substantial, and you hope that what you say sticks. And I guess there needs to be a whole lot more of it. But young people are clearly responsive, and they're like sponges, aren't they? They're receiving everything, trying to make sense of the world that they're growing up in.
Totally. And look, I think we sometimes don't give enough credit to young people and enough credit to ourselves and how we're created to be. And by that I mean, I think we all have the truth written within us. We all have the truth written in our human experience to some degree, and we yearn for truth and we recognize it. And so sometimes it's actually not that difficult when you present the truth of how sex was meant to be experienced for someone. It resonates with them partly because they recognize the lack of truth in their previous experience. And you know, I think of different people, but you know, really close to home, my wife went to a conference when she was just 14 or 15, and a newly married couple got up in front of her, and they just shared about the gift of sex and the beauty of marriage and how they'd made a decision to treat sex like it was a gift for marriage. And for my wife at the time, this was a countercultural message and something she'd never heard. She grew up in a Christian home, but she'd just never heard someone testify or witness to that particular message. She shares that she looked around the room just thinking that everyone else must think this is weird, what they were saying, that this concept was bizarre, and she didn't know where to place herself, and so she just listened, and by the end of that 1 hour talk, she'd made a decision that she wanted to live differently than how her friends were living, and she was going down a path that most her friends were going down, treating, you know, intimacy with people like it was not special, and she made a decision in that 1 hour that was a really firm decision that she ended up sticking by right through to basically our wedding. And so, you know, that's an example, a great story of how one-hour session can change a life. And we've got people in our organisation who actually present for us now who had their sort of conversion moment through seeing our organisation 5 or 6 years ago, and they had the same sort of experience. One talk literally changed the direction of their life.
That is hugely significant, and I know listeners might like to contribute on this level, and you might like to contribute as a parent, you might be an educator, you might have experience as to how these things happened, you might have your own reflection on your own development of ideas about a Christian foundation for sex and relationships. You'd be welcome to call us on 1-800-316-316. Let's take a call. Zoran is in Redcliffe in Queensland, and Zoran, welcome along.
Good morning, Neil. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Very well. Zoran, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a dad, right? I've got two sons, and my son, when he was very young, being that we had Christian values then, I basically said to him, you know, like, just look at what you're doing, because you've got to go through school. You know, you're going to have those sort of things come up to you, but you need to just stay focused. And when it happens, it'll happen. It'll happen for the right reasons. The reason, I mean, the use is a very unstable subject, right? Because, yeah, you are supposed to date, not do anything, and then get married, yeah? That's the Christian value. And but the thing is, parents, and this is not just for you, this is for all. I've experienced pornographic, and it's not good. It's not good, because all it does is it takes away yourself from the person that you're being with, and eventually what it will do, it will drag you into Satan's realm when you should be in Christ's realm. So the message is, for any youth, and you'd understand this, Paul, is if you have any doubt, seek wisdom from God, seek wisdom from Jesus, and really look at yourself. And if you have any problems, get a friend. Get a friend or someone else who's involved, just like you said. You know, 1 hour can change a young person's life.
Zoran, good thoughts in there. Let's get a response from Paul to some of the things Zoran is raising.
Yeah, totally. Look, I think the last thing Zoran was saying there was about get a friend and get some support, and particularly on this topic when it comes to young people, they find it really hard to do it alone. I find it hard to do this walk alone, and so I think that's really good insight. And I think putting ourselves around, again, what he said, around people that can give us a message and can shine a light on the truth coming from the Word of God is also really, really powerful. You know, there was some wisdom that was shared 2,000 years ago that still holds true today, and one of the simplest and classic bits of wisdom that Paul gave in trying to set up the early Christian communities was flee from sexual immorality. Flee from sexual immorality. Not sort of, you know, avoid it a little bit, but get away from it. And I think he recognized that when we make bad choices, when we experience sexual brokenness and sexual sin, it can really deeply affect us personally, but also our culture and our community. You know, it's a simple thing that is really powerful. And time again, when people are exposed to pornography, when people are exposed to premature sexual experiences and negative sexual experiences, we see their personhood affected. We see their future relationships, and it really can damage someone deep within their core. And so, I think, you know, the advice of Paul is great wisdom, that when we get a suspicion that we're getting close to something that's not right when it comes to our sexuality, that his advice was flee, not just depart, but get away as quickly as you can, to as far away from that as you can, because it can deeply, deeply hurt us and hurt those around us as well.
So that advice stands strong today, as it did 2,000 years ago when those words were written by the Apostle Paul. Thank you so much to Zoran from Redcliffe for your insight. 1-800-316-316 if you'd like to contribute to our conversation. Just to pick up on one of those elements that Zoran did actually indicate, which I thought was important, the idea of the parent connection in here, because as parents we might be thinking, oh, well, our kids are going to learn about this when Paul arrives at their school, or teachers are going to be inputting into their children's lives because, you know, the school has some sort of a sex and relationships program. But to sow yourself into your child's life is, and I thought that what Zoran shared, said when he spoke to his child, says, it will happen. Just those words, just that little breaking the ice conversation seems to be very important. What are your thoughts, Paul?
Yeah, look, totally. I think Zoran's right and you're right. It's we, as educators, real talk, we say to schools, to parents, and we send out parents' letters. And sadly, a lot of parents don't have conversations, but we say the parents should be the primary educator when it comes to the human person and sexuality. They know their children the best, they know them intimately, and they also care for them the most usually. And so we really try to empower parents in that dialogue. We also recognise that it's really difficult dialogue and it's hard, and having outside experts come in can really assist the parents in that. I think what Zoran said about getting in first and sort of saying this will happen, you know, the classic thing that I'm saying at parents' nights now when I speak to young people, sorry, speak to the parents of young people, is it's not a question of if their young people will see porn, for instance, as an example, it is when. And that's sad, but with the digital media, that is just what the research is indicating, that we're having close to 100% exposure rates of young people before they reach adulthood. And so what that means is, as parents, we need to have that mindset. If they're going to see this, what can I do that's going to prevent the damage and the negative impact of that? And again, there's great research on this. There's research emerging that when parents talk to their young people about seeing explicit sexual images, it actually prevents and minimizes the impact of when they see that. And so that's really a powerful confirmation of the role of parents. And to give it personal context, because people get shocked when you say, oh, you know, how do we talk to our kids and when do we talk to them and what do we
say? Well, Paul, save that personal context for after the news. We're about to go to news and we'll be interested to hear your own personal context here. But there's a Facebook comment just to draw attention to from John, who says, a child's greatest influence is their parents. To be honest and real in our relationships gives them a healthy understanding, but as parents we need to filter what and who influences our children, like TV and social groups, etc. A quick comment for John before we get into your own personal story.
Yeah, totally. Look, I would agree. We need to have a filter, and quite literally have a filter when it comes to the internet, but also as parents just continually be aware of what's going on and have healthy and safe boundaries there, and we don't like to tell people exactly what to do, but the first step of parents is to consider what it is their young people are exposed to and seeing, and what are they seeing modelled by the parents as well, and those who are the caregivers for the children. So by all means, yeah, I think it's a huge need in today's world that parents watch carefully what their young people are exposed to, because it changes rapidly. And, you know, I think they say that the average young person receives more information via screens in 1 year than the total amount of information their great-grandparents would have received in a lifetime. And so there's a lot of significant bits of input and damage that can be done in a short space of time.
Paul, take us into your own personal story. You are, in fact, a parent. So if we're talking about parents today and dealing with the changing and evolving attitudes of young people to sex and relationships, what are your thoughts from a personal level?
Yeah, totally. There's no instruction manual on how to be a good parent, or no complete instruction manual, and it's hard. And I thank God that I'm in this sort of space that equips me to answer difficult questions and to preempt perhaps things that are going to happen. And the classic one is, as we mentioned before the break, is that a lot of young people, nearly every young person, will be exposed to graphic sexual content the way that society is travelling at the moment. And I encourage parents, and this is a jaw-drop moment when I say this, but I encourage parents to talk to their young people about pornography before their young people have access to Wi-Fi. And I then go on to qualify that by saying, talking to a young person about pornography doesn't mean that you have to even mention pornography. And the classic example I have from my own life was that I was just laying down on a couch outside my house one day, and something popped up on my phone. I was on something like Gumtree, and somehow I clicked on a link, and the next thing I know, there's images on my phone that I didn't want to look at. And I turned to my wife and I said, look what just popped up. And my five-year-old daughter at the time said, oh, Daddy, show me. I want to see, show me. And I said, no. And she said, show me, and kids do this. And I caught myself in that moment doing what I think most parents do, and that's let's hide anything that's potentially harmful from our young people rather than embracing a teachable moment. And so I changed my tack and I said to my daughter, I said, oh, look, something popped up on my screen that was not good for Daddy to see. It was something showing people's private parts in a way that I didn't want to see and that wasn't right. And so I showed Mummy and I took it off the screen. And you know what? If that happens to you, when that happens to you, I want you to do the same thing. You're not in trouble. You just show Mummy and take it off the screen. And you're not in trouble if you ever see something like that. But this is what you can do. And so there was this great opportunity to model a pathway for when my daughter sees something that's inappropriate, and also to try to reduce the shame that potentially could be heaped on her when she sees that, which is obviously one of the things that is really damaging for young people, is that they feel shame when they see pornography, whether it's by choice or not.
So if it's not good for daddy and it's not good for mummy, then children will appreciate that it's not going to be good for them either. There is going to be, isn't there, the sense of when the child gets a little older and there is that access to pornography, and whether it's accidental or whether it's shared in the school playground, as oftentimes happens, or they're visiting friends and these encounters happen, that in some sense here you've got this idea of experimentation. I'm probably talking more to the older teenage years here, but children are likely to experiment. And if you haven't had that grounding earlier, then the experimentation has no real confines. It has nothing to contain it. What are your thoughts on what children and teenagers will be doing with experimentation when it comes to pornography and then further on into other developing sexual and relationship contexts?
Yeah, well, look, you know, statistically, and what most experts say is that the average age of exposure is currently about age 11. There's different research out there, but that's certainly a bit of a consensus that it happens at about this age. Now, it can happen younger. I was speaking with some teachers recently who were about teaching grade 3, and they had some students who had clearly seen pornography at that age. The other thing to say on this as the teenagers get older is that they do actually listen to the parents. A lot of parents think, and maybe the teenagers might say, hey, we don't care what you think, we're not listening to you. They might even say harsher things than that. But again, the research is really clear that a young person, a teenager's perceived belief of what the parents believe actually affects their behaviours. And that any parent that is willing to have conversations about sex, that single factor alone delays the sexual debut of a young person. And so I encourage parents, even if the conversations are difficult, if they don't know what to say, just say anything, because the research is clear. Saying anything helps. And even if a young person thinks what their caregiver believes, they're more likely to follow in that. And so that's, again, an opportunity and encouragement for parents. As far as the behaviours of teenagers, again, there's lots of different research out there. Tragically, some research has just come out of Victoria, and they only had a small sample size, and it was opt-in. So sometimes you've just got to take every bit of research with a grain of salt. But they found that in the young adult population in Australia, they sampled 1,000 people, and 8 out of 10 of the young adult males regularly viewed porn, so daily or weekly, and 2 out of 10 of the young adult females regularly viewed porn, so daily or weekly. And so they're the sort of numbers we're talking about, and they're the sort of challenges that we're facing. And that, as you said, does flow on to behaviours and also expectations and perceptions of sex. And the classic one that the research has found quite clearly is how young males perceive and approach women when it comes to violence. So those that have seen more porn are more likely to be okay with violent sexual behaviours against women and speak of women in a more misogynistic way. And that's, you know, tragic, as we're seeing in society at the moment.
Yep. Paul Ninnis is our guest from Real Talk International. Our talkback line is open, 1-800-316-316. Paul, let's take a call. Sandra is in Victoria. Hello, Sandra. Welcome along.
Good morning, Pastor.
Good to hear from you.
Pastor Ninnis there, Paul. Yes, this is rather fortuitous because the first place I went to was St. Paul's Church.
All right, okay.
As a four-year-old, my father took me along, and that, I believe, is the
Sandra, what are your thoughts on our conversation today?
Teaching the good book to the little ones as soon as possible. As soon as they learn their ABCs, introduce them into the Bible, little stories. The Bible, yes.
Good thoughts in that. Let's get a thought from Paul, because some people will be saying, well, I want to teach my children, you know, what the latest social science might teach on these things, but we have 2,000 years history of having the Bible as a foundation for life, for relationships, for marriage. What are your thoughts for Sandra as she shares what is simple and yet what I believe is profound wisdom?
Yeah, great. Yeah, thank you, Sandra, and a really good reminder. And you're totally correct. And I think underpinning any healthy sexuality as a person develops into teenage years and adult years is a healthy childhood. And with that is a perception of self. So, you know, the basic principles of being made in the image and likeness of God, that God made us good and God made us as men and women, is just a basic principle that can be affirmed from the early days. Again, it's being able to say, hey, you know, at bath times, you are beautiful, and these parts of your body are beautiful, precious parts made by God for good. And so for too long, the idea of sex and personhood has been shrouded in almost shame and gloom, and yet it's a glorious, beautiful vision that we were created for good. And so if a young person can grasp those concepts, like being made in the image and likeness of God, that we as human beings are the pinnacle of creation, if they can grasp that and realise their value, their worth and their dignity, then it sets them up in good stead for making good decisions later in life.
Thank you so much to Sandra from Victoria. Our talkback line open 1-800-316-316. A Facebook comment from Judith, who says, with our kids, right from an early age, we've encouraged an honest question, honest answer policy, despite how uncomfortable. This has really helped with communication with difficult teenage questions and online issues. Your thoughts for Judith, Paul?
Yeah, totally. And I think that's sort of what I was getting at, that a conversation that happens early in life, and tragically people think of the sex talk as a talk that you tick a box and it's done, but it's an ongoing journey. And Kim Keady, who I founded Real Talk with, she would say it's a stepwise journey. People think of it as an elevator when it's actually a stepwise journey. And it's using those daily teachable moments, you know, like bath time, like driving in the car and seeing a billboard that might misrepresent the goodness of a person. It's using those teachable moments and saying, you know, there's some truth here that we'd love to share with you, and allow people to be captured and captivated by the truth of the goodness of humanity and sex and relationships.
Taking calls, 1-800-316-316. Jim is on the line from Kyabram in Victoria. Hello, Jim. Welcome along.
Thanks, Neil. I didn't grow up in a Christian family, so the environment wasn't great. It was probably not a good time in the life of things that were shown on TV. I won't say the names of them, but I thank God that I've been changed. And one of the biggest things, lessons for me, was just to know that we're not condemned, as he says in Jesus said in John 3:17 and 18 that he did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but the world might be saved. He who believes in him is not condemned, but he who does not believe is condemned already because he has not believed. And of course, Romans 8, you know, there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ. You need to, for those who are struggling with that area, is for me, what I've had to do is I've done like the Valiant Man course 5 times. And after that, I was hungry for more. And I read a book called Clean, which they have the Conquer series do from America. And it, just trying to get those things into my mind all the time, because it needed renewing. I needed to get my mind the same. And people at my church, they did this thing called Love Waits. And they didn't have even kiss until they were married. But the day they got married, they kissed, you know. And someone set a higher standard for us to look towards and really respect that couple. And I'm 52. I'm still waiting to get married. I haven't slept with a woman for 27 years. I'm not trying to be self-righteous in that. You know, I've had my struggles. Yeah. But along the way, people have said things to me. You know, the body creates fluids, and we don't know how to deal with it, you know. And one friend said to me, you know, that the eagle, you know, it releases its seeds on the side of the nest sometimes. And so it's not about being condemned. It's about helping each other understand that God didn't design, like you said, he designed it for marriage, but not to feel like the devil wants to make us feel dirty or uncomfortable.
Jim, good thoughts in there. Let's get a thought from Paul, because the thing I'm gleaning from this, and there's a lot of things in what you're saying, Jim, but as a Christian, and you've been a part of a church, you've had access to resources that people outside of the church have not had access to, and you've been able to create within your own life a sense of a healthy sexuality. Let me just bring Paul in on here. What are your thoughts for Jim?
Yeah, great. Look, thank you, Jim, you know, congratulations on the path and the road that you're living and leading others. It's you know, there's a lot Jim touched on there. He, you know, he talked about speaking truth. He talked about the biblical values and going back to scriptures that can remind you of the truth. And particularly, he talked about shame and guilt. And you know, I think he brought up something we touched on before, that when we make these bad choices, when we stuff, when we sin, so often it can lead us down a path of shame, and the shame that comes with sexual sin can be debilitating. It can literally take people out for decades, and that's not God's intention. That's not God's intention. We saw it back in the Garden of Eden, where they went and hid, and their first response was this hiding, and we've been doing it ever since. We pull ourselves out of the light and go into the darkness, and that's not the intention. You know, we can have godly guilt that reminds us that what we've done is wrong, but when shame comes upon us, we say to ourselves, I am bad, and the truth is we can never be bad. And so there's a big difference between, hey, being prompted by our conscience and a realization that we can and should and are created to do better, versus actually saying, hey, I am bad, and I'm experiencing that shame and living out of that shame. And so that was a really great point. The other thing he mentioned was a couple of programs that I've also run myself, called Valiant Man by Dr. Alan Myers, which is a great program for men and young men, and also the Conquer series, which is, again, I've run, and that's out of the US, and they're both great programs. And I believe that in today's culture, we all need sexual discipleship. We all need to help lead others, and also be supported by others in our journey on the difficult road that we have on this topic, because it's never been more difficult. Let's be straight, particularly for our young people. I hear parents say, oh, we were young once, but they don't know the world that today's young people are living in, and digital technologies are a game changer. It has never been more difficult for a young person to avoid sexual immorality than it is right now. And so they need a lot of support and a lot of prayers and a lot of guidance.
Thank you so much to Jim from Kyabram. And our talkback line open, 1-800-316-316. Let's just reflect for just a few more moments on this issue of shame, because you mentioned it a number of times, Paul. And when you are exposed to some of these things that we would say are shameful, then we've been talking about, you know, how pornography dehumanizes. But when we're exposed to things that are shameful or do things that are shameful, you say this is what makes us feel as though that we are bad. Now, as I understand the way that shame works, when we feel bad and we feel not important, not valued, we're undervalued, then because we feel undervalued, we try to then pursue those things that have caused us shame in the first place, and they become even more attractive. What are your thoughts on just the way, just if you don't deal with that shame, sometimes you're on a treadmill and there's no real end in sight for some of the challenges we face?
Yeah, look, totally. And I think that the research around sexual abuse sort of backs that up, that so often people who are abused become abusers, and it's tragic. It's this generational burden and blockage and heaviness that can be passed on. And I think, obviously, what shame does is it puts things in the shadows, and a lot can go on in the dark, quite literally, you know. And so I think by bringing it out into light, by asking for forgiveness, by seeking guidance and speaking truth over our lives and over other people's lives, it helps highlight the dignity and the truth of what occurred. And time again, we'll speak to someone who's had something occur to them, or has made a choice that they really really didn't have many options around. They had a lifestyle or what have you that led them down a path, and so often they can carry the burden of that and going to God and asking for forgiveness, but also teaching that person about the goodness of themselves, and also freeing them from the lies that they've believed about themselves in making those choices, is just a weight off. And you know, I see it in my life, I see it in people's lives, and you can literally see it, a person change in one session of conversation or one session of prayer, and it can be so dramatic that it changes a whole person's outlook and future. And I think this topic is so important for that reason. It's I think if you look at this topic, you can see how things that are really good are often most profaned and most messed with, and I think that's because the enemy doesn't create good things. The enemy just distorts good things and makes them do something that's less than good. And we see that all the time in this topic.
You know, just a couple of minutes remaining for our conversation, and there's so much more we could talk about. But just to pick up on one thing, and just to need just a brief answer, Paul, but this idea of parents who might be of, you know, reflecting on their own life and the way that they were perhaps not shaped in the way that we're talking about today in their own relationships. They haven't got the runs on the board themselves. They feel inadequate, and they even feel ashamed when it comes to teaching good and right things to their children. Is there, and you mentioned, you know, sometimes you can pray with people or you can be involved with couples, and you can put a line under that, and you can start afresh. I mean, this is where the power of God comes in. Your thoughts just quickly on starting afresh and bringing in a new freshness into the way you, as a parent, communicate to your children.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think you basically nailed it. It starts with the person, the parent themselves, actually looking into themselves and their own attitudes to this topic and reminding themselves that God is good, I am good, and sex is good. And so it's naming that sometimes we can live under a banner of sex being dirty and we may have been brought up in that way or perhaps our experiences. Starting with that as parents is going, hey, do I myself feel adequately free from the burdens and the mistakes I've made, and am I well formed, and do I get the vision in this? So I think for anyone leading anyone else, they need to be captured by the vision and the goodness and the truth of the message before they can impart that on others. And so I'd encourage parents out there to have a conversation, with their pastor, their leader, and also their partner about this topic, and see what can I do in my life for greater healing, and also how can I set myself up for the win in how I parent my young person.
Well, Paul, just so valuable, the things that you have shared with us over this past hour. And I know that there will be people listening to us saying, how do I get Paul or a member of his team at the school that my children go to? And I know you might like to let us in on this, but a very quick, in a nutshell, Real Talk International, you're based in Brisbane. Are you stretching out in other states and territories around Australia? And how can people...
Yeah, look, we go to pretty much every city in Australia and New Zealand at some point during the year. So if they get in contact with us, we'd love to, you know, see more young people. We were in Melbourne last week, or I think we're in Armidale somewhere today, one of our presenters. So we're all over the place. So please check us out at realtalkaustralia.com, and we'd love to help assist you in raising great, awesome young people.
Well, realtalkaustralia.com to make contact with our guest today, Paul Ninnis. He's the co-founder and managing director of Real Talk International. Paul, thank you so much for taking some time to share your heart with us today here on 2020.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.